Guten Morgen. Die großen Themen der Klassik für den Weg zur Arbeit mit Axel Brüggemann.
Good morning. Today is Thursday, September 24th. Welcome to another edition of the Backstage Classical Podcast, today again in English. When directing opera is no longer enough for someone, what do they do then? Perhaps they expand the battlefield of art into video and by founding a new label. The label is called Heresy, created by Irishman Eric Frad, a treasure trove of new ideas. On the one hand, classical recordings of Irish musical traditions, the Wexford carols and strange wonders ranging from early music to etudes by Philip Glass. But Eric has also directed a film around the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, Partita. And it is about nothing less than saving the world. How does that work? Hopefully, he will tell us now on the phone. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Axel.
If I look at your page, if I look at your label, I ask myself, there is this Eric Frad. He was director. He did The Ark in Dublin. He did everything on stage. Why the heck did you found the record label?
Well, that's really interesting. I had moved from New York to Dublin in around 2000. Okay. And I was, you know, in New York, in the United States, and even working in Europe, I began as an opera director.
Right.
And then I moved into doing theater pieces. And I created sort of a genre of theater that smashed together music, opera, drama, and dance. And I would stage unusual pieces.
Right.
They would be made up, or we would stage oratorios like, you know, Handel's Messiah, or, you know,
yeah,
other sort of like large works that weren't necessarily meant to be staged or written.
Opera and became too small for you.
Well, yeah, you know, opera was, I just found these other things that were more interesting, that were very stage worthy, or I'd find a text and I'd put it together with classical music and
right,
with, you know, with dance, and just sort of like create this species of stuff, and we would tour them to festivals and in different places. And I continued to do this in Dublin, and did it around Europe and stuff like that. And I, at a certain point, I thought, like, you know, we're doing all this stuff and we're making these, and, you know, it would be easy to make the recordings of these pieces, which were sort of sui generis and unusual and their own thing. And we were working with some very powerful artists, doing a lot of early music at the time and some contemporary music as well. Because, you know, I mean, early music sort of like used smaller forces, and I was just personally attracted to it as well. And so, you know, we started doing this, and it just seemed to have made sense to sort of like find a way. And at the very beginning, I thought we created this name Heresy for the label, because the idea was to do something, you know, that was sort of subversive within
right,
the conservative classical music world. And
sure did,
we started
yeah,
doing that. We, you know, we started recording these things, and then sort of using, you know, a more like using design in different ways.
Right.
And it just seemed like at that point, I understood that the economics weren't going to be that easy, but
well put, yeah,
charged ahead.
But what was your experience? I mean, if you are a director for stage, of course, you always have the ideas for the moment, and the audience is there in the room, shares the same thing at the same time, and it's this magic of performing arts. On the other hand, there's a record label, as you say, it's for documentation, but as well, it can be, and this is where it becomes interesting with you, it can be an own art form to be recorded art. I'm talking, we will be talking about the music you record as well, but right now you prepared a video which is called Partita, and this is a play on its own means, isn't it? And it really works with the new media film and merges classical music staging for what, film,
yeah, and dance and everything. I started directing music videos. I don't know, over 10 years ago and did a lot of pop music videos and classical music videos. And then I started doing long form films, and then I started doing full length feature films that I got, like, you know, funding for. And a lot of it was funded by the Irish Arts Council. And these films, again, they're unusual. A lot of the things I do are sort of like unusual. They're out of the mainstream, but I think that, you know, they appeal to people. And what appealed to me was, like, what you said is completely correct. You know, I was always, I thought, like, you know, when I first saw and listened to the music of, like, you know, the label ECM, yes, or like certain pop rock labels like 4AD, these were these boutique labels that had their own design, that there was a vision that the producer of the label and the founder of the label created something unusual, its own niche, and that had, like, some cultural relevance, that created something new. And that's what attracted me to the record business. I'd also gone to school at Columbia Business School and gotten an MBA. So running companies and doing the business side of it wasn't something that was completely alien to me. That was something that I was sort of interested in as well, and I sort of had some understanding of how to do it.
But before we talk about the business side of it, let's talk about the artistic side of it once more. Sure. This Partita, I mean, during Corona, everybody learned it is not enough to just put a camera and film what is on stage, but that that filmmaking has an own approach to music, and there has to be another artistic grip on the topics. To just take everybody in the boat, Partita is, it's two people on a castle inviting musicians to save the world through music in 24 yes. hours.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there were a few things that came together, like essentially the idea was that, you know, the world is in a parlous state. Right. You know, we see, like, you know, I don't have to tell anybody about that. I mean, between wars and plagues and political division and technological upheaval, and, you know, everybody is acutely aware of the polycrisis that the world is facing right now. And so the idea was that there are these two sort of magicians, a husband and a wife, who own this spectacular mansion, one of the great mansions in Ireland, we shot it at, in the countryside. And they feel that in a 24-hour ceremony of art, that they will invite a group of artists there to create these special magical performances that on a spiritual level supposedly begin to heal the world. Mm-hmm. And so they invite dancers and instrumentalists and pianists and
lots of Bach.
The whole thing is very funny in that way. It's because essentially I was listening to recordings of the Bach partitas for keyboard, and it just struck me. I said, "I love these pieces. What can I do with it?" And then the whole thing emerged out of that. It's sort of selfish, you know. I just wanted to work with the piece.
What can I do with the partitas? Just save the world. I mean, we don't do it smaller. Yeah.
So we rearranged the partitas for instruments, and we brought a bunch of early music specialists from Germany. The concert pianist Ji Liu, who's a frequent collaborator of mine, we worked with him. My wife is the singer Katrina O'Leary, who's a well-established early music singer and also sings traditional music, and she's an amazing arranger and composer on her own.
Even got a Pulitzer Prize writer.
Yeah. We went to Jory Graham, who is possibly the greatest American poet right now, and she's a Pulitzer Prize winner, MacArthur Grant winner, and she's the professor at Harvard of rhetoric and oratory. And she speaks throughout the film as well, and we use her films. The idea was doing something sort of like the like Beethoven's, like Schiller's Ode to Joy, and to have a very upbeat sort of text. So we took the partitas and set them to text by Jory Graham, who also speaks throughout the entire piece. And it's a very bizarre piece, but it's very beautiful, and it somehow works rather beautifully.
I mean, the whole film, I just saw the trailer, but it is really like magic. How was it when you recorded it? Did this magic, which of course happens in the film, happen on the set as well? Or was it hard work with lots of sweat?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was intense because working in a place like we worked at, which was called Rustborough House, is sort of a museum. And, you know, as Martin Scorsese said, as one sort of like axiom, never let anybody film in your house, you know. And so they were always careful that we weren't going to smash the place up with all the technical crews and stuff like that. But it was, and then we had all, you know, every project has all these disasters. So G, the pianist, was going to China where he was doing concerts, and he got COVID and they detained him for 6 weeks at the airport. And worse than that, he couldn't get back for the filming. So we had to shoot the entire film without him and then find a way to put him in the film that it looks like he's organically in the film. So it had its issues, but in the end, it sort of came, necessity was the mother of invention, and it came out very well.
That's how magic works. Not normally, it's just necessity.
And it sounds great too.
So, absolutely. And it's really worth watching because it's a complete different approach towards music. You just sent, your label was founded and your work is out of the mainstream. And that's what I have experienced as well. After we opened this page, Backstage Classical, all the papers for classical music were kind of vanishing. Music journalism disappeared out of daily papers. But out of the mainstream, there is a niche, and this niche is working quite well. Is that the secret of Heresy Records as well? I mean, you really have this approach, this Irish approach. If you look at the CDs or the other recordings you are doing, is Mystics and Cines. It's the Wexford Carols, of course, which was a bestseller. It's like this Irish music. It's this roots of folk music, merging classical music to folk music. Is this niche actually the success of your ideas?
I think what it is it's coming up with a concept, and then the record, that was the idea for the very beginning. There was a theatricality of it and a concept-driven approach to it. So rather than just recording, say, you know, Beethoven sonatas, it was sort of like, let's come up with a concept would emerge either through an artist or through me or through, you know, some collaboration where we'd say, this is a cool idea, let's fund this idea and let's pull this idea together and let's make this piece, you know what I mean? And often it would have a video with it, or it could have a concert with it, and it would be an unusual piece rather than just doing repertoire, so to speak, you know. So rather than being repertoire based, it was more concept based, and that was more probably came from a more theatrical sort of background, like from where I come from anyway.
Right. Is that something perhaps classical music lost as well in the last years? That, I mean, it's always the same, basically. I mean, this is what classical music is. It's the difference of always the same. But that musicians went on stage, played something, next day they go to another stage, play something else, and they don't even ask themselves for the meaning, for the reason, for the concept of what they are doing, because it was a self-fulfilling prophecy and it doesn't work anymore. And now we have to find new meanings, new ideas, new concepts to ensure ourselves as well. Why is the art we are doing important? What does it have to say to us today?
I love Backstage Classical. I think it's a great achievement, and I have to say,
thank you.
It's beautiful. It's beautifully produced and all that. So I think it's a real winner. But besides that, I agree. I think what's happening is that the, you know, just demographically, the audiences are diminishing incredibly. Yeah. You know, what's happening and what kids listen to is even rock and roll is dying out. We'll see all that.
It's classic now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's classic now and it'll be forgotten. And these people, these iconic pop stars that people think will be, you know, they'll be thought of like Beethoven in like 200 years, they're going to be completely forgotten.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then there'll be new pop music because it's as brilliant as some of it is, it's essentially disposable, you know, which is what's the difference between and it's relevant for a very certain time and for a very certain purpose. Mm. And popular music was like that. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't survive as some sort of a historical sort of like artifact, it means that, you know, it just doesn't have the sustaining artistic quality usually to like be remembered. And classical music does, but at the same time, the audiences become much, much less. And, you know, there's a whole series of factors which people who run concert houses, you know, are very well aware of, you know.
Of course. And your answer is, if I see that correctly, is really that almost everything you're producing has to do with mystics, has to do with wonders, has to do with magicians, with the hope of our spirit evoking to something else, to something higher, to feel home in this world again, which is so strange to us at some points in reality. Is that something where you say, yeah, this is what music can do, especially old music, and you get all these good musicians to it, the Wexford Carols, I think Tom Jones is there, then Alison Balsam will be there on Strange Wonders. Is this magic side of music and of arts in general something where you think, yeah, that could heal at least our souls in a crazy world?
I believe it can begin to build bridges and to make and to offer a path forward, because nothing else is doing it. You know, it doesn't seem like bridges are being built. It just seems that art in general is a place that creates a completely different space that doesn't have to be used for anything, but that can open things up and can offer experience, you know, a new type of really, really special human experience. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's all life is. It's just a bunch of experiences strung together, you know?
And it's hopefully throughout the time.
More positive than the ones that are happening.
Yeah, it's throughout time. This is what one sees in your recordings as well, because you have old songs, old Irish folk songs, but then you go up to the etudes of Glass, you know? So actually, people were always seeking for the same thing in art, didn't they?
Yes. It always fulfilled the same, whether the world was based in religion a thousand years ago or 500 years ago, or if it's a completely secular world, the people are looking for the same sorts of experiences and some sort of transcendent experience or some sort of feeling that makes them feel, you know, that gives them a certain type of feeling or perspective and joy.
And you have to courageous enough to let it go as well, don't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Without a doubt, because that's another problem. And that's a problem with a lot of the music today. I have young kids who are, they're like, you know, in their 20s. And I have to say, I've become quite familiar with the music they listen to, and a lot of rap and stuff like that. And while a lot of it's very inventive, and very clever, and musically even interesting and lyrically interesting, a lot of it is pretty dark. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it necessarily is salubrious or healthful, but you know, it must mean a lot to the people that are listening to it. Doesn't mean a lot to me, I'll tell you that.
I can join in there. But for the last part of the entrepreneur, you as an entrepreneur, if you have this label, do you see that as well? I mean, it was for me, it was interesting to confront with your work and with your label, because you can't get a grip on it, like if you take it by the conventional attitude of this is a label and what are we talking about, because suddenly you are in complete different worlds with you. Is that something what you feel as well, that if you let things go, something like a label develops in different directions as well, which you have not expected to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an axiom that the first casualty of battle is the plan, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the first casualty of business is often the plan. Sometimes things turned out better and sometimes things turn out worse, but they never turn out the way you expected them to.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, this is a really difficult time to do, like recorded music, particularly in like classical music or niche music or art music. And even I would assume in popular music, a lot of people have problems as well, because a lot of the, you know, I mean, people are buying less and less you know, physical recorded product like CDs or vinyl and whatever. And the entire, the economics have been overturned. But more people, opportunities exist. And still, hearing live music, you know, is always an experience that more and more and more people are going to listen to live music. And I'm certain that that's going to continue.
We will follow your entrepreneurship without plan and see how it grows and what direction it grows. And yeah, it really is an adventure. And I can just encourage you out there, have a look on the page, have a look to the trailer, and yeah, have some ears into the music you're recording. Thank you very much, Eric, for sharing your experience with us.
Axel, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Eric Frad, founder of the label Heresy. Have a listen and check it out yourself. For example, the trailer of Partita, which is already available. Let yourself be inspired. I say thank you for today and keep your ears open.